If you have any questions about the webinar, you can call 877-817-9829, but with Esalen, 877-817-9829. I hate to charge people for information, but you know, sometimes it is you. I really believe you need to be there, and it's $20, and I think you're going to get something out of it. There's very few people on this planet that can give you the perspective that Daniel Esalen is going to give you. And do I agree with everything that comes out? I don't agree with everything my wife says, but I'm going to be there at that webinar. I'll be there with bells on, and I want to hear it. I want to, you know, have the discussion and see where this goes. This is important information for where we're at. These are unprecedented times in so many ways. And we do have a bias. We have a normalcy bias. Oh, they'll turn the economy back on. Really? I think that's naive. I really do. I just think it's naive. So what are you going to do? What are you going to do about it when everything they tell you, the corporate media tells you, the universities are telling you is A, but when really it's B, where are you going to get information how to deal with scenario B? Well, you're certainly not going to get it from corporate media. It shows like this, independent media. And Daniel can't just come on radio and say these things because it causes, believe me, it causes problems for us. So we're going to have a private way to do it. So check that out. 877-817-9829. Go to thepowerhour.com. You can click on the banner. And, yeah, I think it's very important that you're there, and I think that you'll get something out of it. Our next guest, I've never interviewed before. Talked to him a little bit, before we went live, and just a charming fellow. He's actually from England originally, which is very cool. You know how we love Brits here. John Ellis. He's a distinguished professor emeritus from the University of California at Santa Cruz. He taught at universities in England, Wales, Canada before coming to California in 1966, serving as the dean of the graduate division in 77 through 86. He's author of 10 books. His new book, which is kind of what we're going to be focusing on, is The Breakdown of Higher Education, How It Happened, the Damage It Does, and What Can Be Done. John Ellis, welcome to the Power Hour.
Thank you for having me on.
Yes, it's a pleasure. It's very nice meeting you. Now, our audience, they don't know you from Adam hardly, except for your accent. That's about it. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to this point, and let's go from there.
Well, I born in London, England, and trained at the University of London, but after a few stints at universities and other places, I settled in California. And because it's easy to love California, but at least 50 years ago, it was certainly a complete pleasure. And the University of California is a world-class institution, so I was very pleased to be there. And I've watched what's happened over the last 50 years at the University of California, and it's been rather sad. I mean, there has been a steady decline, and that decline has reached a point where it's not just that it's not as good as it was, it's worse than that. It is now at the point where any intelligent person with having had a good look at what's going on the campuses would have to question whether it's really worthwhile for kids to spend 4 years of their lives and for their parents to spend large amounts of money supporting them while they do. That's very, very sad. I mean, we had world-class institutions at one point that were doing wonderful things for our society. What they now do, if anything, is actually rather destructive.
Okay, you remind me a little of my mother-in-law. I mean that's a compliment. I really do. There's a joke there somewhere, isn't there? But anyway, what I mean by that is my mother-in-law, you know, probably about 1960 sometime, in the 60s, she got a teaching job, taught for 25, 30 years, retired. But she saw the change at a local, she was at elementary middle school level, but even at that level, she could see school change. She could see society change in school. You're doing it at a higher level. What goes through your mind in the, 30, 40, 50 years that you've been teaching? How is it different today than it was, all those many years ago?
Well, I mean, the job of an academic teacher, everyone understood 50 years ago, was to make your students think for themselves, bring out independent thinking.
Pause right there.
How,
Pause right there. That idea, what you just said, make them think for themselves. You understood that. What do you mean you understood that? You mean you were, that was like part of your teach, as you learned to be a teacher, that was imprinted upon you? They said you need to make, or why, how did you have that idea?
Well, it was common, the common attitude. The whole of the academic world, the aim was to make these kids independent thinkers, thinkers who could solve problems, who could look at a problem, look at all sides of it, you know, look at it from this side and that side, and come up with an understanding of it that was much greater than when they started. You were always trying to develop kids' ability to think and think and think again. So when it came to ideas, like political ideas, if they had an idea, what you wanted them to do was to look at the strengths and the weaknesses of that idea. Now, you couldn't do that without them looking at competing ideas, from a different, you know, political ideas from a different perspective. You made them look at the weaknesses and strengths of those too. So by the time they'd finished, they understood what they were doing in a much deeper way than before. And they came out of college as better citizens because they were able to look at problems they'd face in their lives and be trained to think them through, to get greater understanding of them, to solve issues, and be able to respond to new challenges. I mean, thinking it never can stay still. I mean, in this life, you meet unexpected situations. Now, that's where the trained thinker comes in, the guy who's used to getting unexpected challenges and to rising to them. Now, what's going on now, 50 years later, is the professors are telling kids not how to think for themselves. What they want them to do is to believe what the professors tell them to believe. They give them, I mean, they give them their political ideas, and they just say, basically, this is the way to go. This is what we want you to believe. And if the kid starts to talk about the strengths and weaknesses of that political idea, they'll get shut up because the professor doesn't want to hear about the strengths and weaknesses of his ideas. As far as he's concerned, they have so many strengths, they don't have weaknesses. And if the kid wants to compare them to different ideas, conservative ideas, again, the professor will shut him up and say that the conservative ideas are evil and I don't want to hear about them. Well, what you get then is indoctrinated kids who don't learn to think for themselves, don't learn to analyze problems, don't get their minds stretched and opened, but instead they get them closed. And actually, to be honest with you, they're worse off after 4 years of that than they were when they went in. I mean, whatever originality of thought, whatever flexibility of thinking, whatever intellectual curiosity they had that they naturally brought to college at age 18 will have been knocked out of them. They'd be better off if they just simply hadn't done that at all. Now, you know, this means we have a whole generation of United States citizens who haven't really had a college education in the sense that I understood it when I started teaching. If anything, what they've had is an anti-education, an education in how not to think, you know, how to stop thinking, how to believe, how to behave, how to respond emotionally, but not intellectually, not with their brains, but with their emotions. So what you see on college campuses, if someone speaks out and says something that contains ideas that the campus community doesn't like, the response is not, well, we'll have a look at that idea and analyze it and see how good it is. No, the response is shut it down. Shut that guy down. Doesn't have a right to speak. Well, this is poisonous. I mean, it's the reverse of education. I mean, a lot of what goes on college campuses now, I would describe as anti-education. Teaching kids how not to think, how to stop thinking.
You talked about what education used to be and that people are able to think for themselves and be able to analyze a situation. Also, when that happens, that's kind of the American ideal. That's kind of the American exceptionalism where at one point in this country, we invented more things than any other country. We had more patents. We exploded with ideas. Not only is the individual blessed, but then the society as a whole is blessed, because now that individual can come up with a unique solution, a unique patent, because they're trained to fulfill their potential. It's really their potential is being able to be fulfilled. And everybody, you know, Edison, if Edison had been trained at one of these colleges, he probably wouldn't have invented the light bulb. In fact, I pretty certainly would have invented the light bulb.
Exactly right. I mean, you're putting your finger on the tremendous strength of America. And it's what I recognized when I first came here. I think I was 30 years old when I got to America. And I could see instantly that this was a bunch of people who were free mentally. You know, they were free of preconceptions. I mean, European society that I grew up in, I certainly fond of England, but there was this phrase that everyone was used to, dead men's shoes. You know, you got a job and you waited for the guy who was one above you to die, and then you took his place and you went up. But there was no, in that structure, there was no place for independent thinking, right? In other words, if you have an idea that was better than the guy who you were waiting to die off, too bad. You're going to have to wait. But I saw instantly in America that this was a country where individuals were free to think and invent and imagine and make progress in understanding. And nothing stood in their way yet. And what has happened recently is that our colleges are stopping that. I mean, they're creating a nation that is unlike the America that I recognized when I came here as a truly wonderful place.
You mentioned Europe. I'm kind of fascinated. I'm a real fond or amateur historian of the Revolution, kind of that time, the Declaration of Independence into Europe, or away from Europe, away from England. What was England's perception of the United States when you were 29 years old in England? What did they think about America?
Well, I think they were ambivalent. You know, the average Englishman was a bit jealous of America. America is very powerful, and England used to be the great power of the world, and it knows it's not. So there was a bit of jealousy. On the other hand, there was a great deal of respect as well, because England knew that the only reason they won the Second World War was that they had the backing of America. So there was, there's both things. There's enormous gratitude, a little bit of jealousy that England is no longer the great power of the world. But I would say that, if anything, things have gotten better in the last 50 years. I mean, I think the spirit of cooperation between England and America, to judge between what I hear my old friends and relations in England saying, the spirit of cooperation is better than it was 50 years ago.
What is, or maybe was, let's talk about, 50 years ago. What was England's attitude about the American Revolution, these, upstart vagabonds and independence and that idea?
Well, I think, again, there's a bit of ambivalence, but, I mean, you take Winston Churchill. Now, Winston Churchill said that the great documents of English-speaking civilization were Magna Carta, and then he ticked off a few others. I mean, an incident like the Glorious Revolution of 1688. And then he said, and this is Winston Churchill speaking, he said, the American Declaration of Independence. He counted the American Declaration of Independence as one of the major documents of English-speaking civilization. So that tells you there is a great respect for what America did in setting up its new form of government. And certainly, I think that it was a miracle. It was one of the greatest events of world history. I think everyone knows that Athens in the 5th century was one of the great episodes of world history, right? And Rome. I think America, 1776, deserves to be put with those two. I mean, the most interesting because they invented a form of government that stood the test of time, that created the most powerful and successful and happiest nation on earth. And the reason they were able to do that was that those people were very knowledgeable. They learned from history. I mean, they looked back on what had happened in the French Revolution. Oh, actually, they weren't there yet. I'm sorry. But they looked back on what happened in the English Civil War in Rome. They could see the whole sweep of history. They knew the dangers of monarchy, but they knew the dangers of anarchy as well. They knew the dangers of having too weak a government, but they knew the dangers of having too strong a government. And what they came up with to solve these very difficult problems was a document of real genius, I think.
When you say miracle, why do you say miracle? Why do you say it was a miracle?
Well, because, I mean, on the face of it, a group of people that were mainly farmers, you wouldn't have predicted they'd come up with a document of such incredible brilliance. I mean, places like London, Paris had a long history of intellectuals and so on, and Americans rose to the occasion in a way that was, to me anyway, I would think unexpected and astonishing. Anyway, but to go back to Winston Churchill thought the American Declaration of Independence ranked with the Magna Carta in the history of English-speaking civilization. And that's a pretty high praise, I think.
The reason I have a purpose of going back there because I'm going to get there eventually. I promise, John. But the Thomas Jefferson is probably, you know, the mind of America. Adams, you know, obviously there's key figures, Patrick Henry, whatever. Jefferson is probably stamped as kind of the mind of the American Revolution. He was also self-taught, self-educated for a large part of his life. His schooling was at home, most of it. You know, he went to other places, but this type of whole learning he had experienced, and a lot of those people had experienced a whole, kind of complete, learning where they were, I don't know what the word is. There wouldn't be any of those things without that type of education back then. Comment on that.
Well, look, you're right. And the one thing that distinguished those people was that they knew they had to fend for themselves. You know, they couldn't go back to, you know, Cambridge and Oxford University and ask the intellectuals. They were on their own. And they knew they had to think for themselves and make their own way. And that's part of their success, that they didn't see any inherent limitations on them. I mean, they knew they had a problem, they had to think it through, they had to solve it. And that spirit, that independent spirit of Americans, I think is what carried them through. If it had been in Europe, they'd have gone back to the, you know, University of Paris and got some bad advice from professors.
They'd went to their professor. That's the stupidest idea I've ever heard. Sit down and shut up. F.
No, but you see what I mean. There's a sort of independent thinking. There's a spirit of we have to do this ourselves, which characterizes America at that time and since then, too. And it's what made this country great, and it's what's being destroyed on university campuses right now.
Are you familiar with the term OBE, outcome-based education, Skinnerism, any of those terms?
Yeah.
You said, why the sullen voice there?
Well,
you
sound... well, because, you know, university intellectuals have a tendency to overestimate the power of their own thinking, I think. They're dangerously exposed to being separated from the world of experience. See, that's where those great founding fathers were superb. They lived real lives. I mean, they had to deal with the problems of running a farm and so on. And when they had to solve a political problem, they brought the common sense and wisdom they got from their private lives to it, and that helped them. To some extent, people like Skinner strike me as ivory tower people who really got obsessed with a behaviorist idea and got a bit remote from the real experience of real people.
Well, it seems to me that's kind of, I know it at a, not a high university level, I don't know as much, but at a local high school, middle school level in America, that's what's taken over. This idea of basically dog training, stimulus in, stimulus out, we feed you, and you regurgitate back to us and we get the response that we want. That's what education has become at the middle school level in the United States. I don't know. Is that the similar at the higher level?
Well, look, I think I would look at it the other way around. I mean, who trains those teachers, those middle school teachers?
Great point. Great point.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, they're trained by those university intellectuals. They train them. If you want to look for the origin of your problems of high school and middle school, elementary school, you've got to look to the fact that the teachers all train in education departments on university campuses. Now, education departments on university campuses are probably further left than any other department on the campus.
Wow, that doesn't bode well. That doesn't.
Yeah, it's a very bad situation. I mean, you've got a steady flow of radical activists, left-wing activists, being churned out by university education departments and going into the high schools and the middle schools and elementary schools. Not good for our country. It's a tremendous problem.
There's the music.
There's
the music. Pause right there, John. We'll continue on the other side after the break. The name of the book is The Breakdown of Higher Education, How It Happened, The Damage It Does, and What Can Be Done. Check it out. Certainly, I mean, I'm learning a lot here from John. Certainly, you will learn a lot from this book. We're going to ask how we got to this point on the other side. Stay tuned. John Ellis, you're listening to The Power Hour.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Break the bond to Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with Olive Oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that olive oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
With dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Humana Food Storage is nutritious, is GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemicals, preservatives, or soy. And Humana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. Call Jay at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com.
America made. Good for you. Food storage, I love to eat. Yum.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiatics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams Probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Welcome back to the Power Hour, thepowermall.com, thepowermall.com. Lateral Flora Probiotic is a flash sale on that from Dr. Group's products. That's great. Shelf-stable probiotics you can take. The Living Streams, you got to refrigerate. This you can, you know, take on a trip or what have you. I use both of them. I love both of them. So that ends at midnight tonight. What else we got here? REM sleep and the new Tranquil formula. There's a on sale on that. The Tranquil formula to be able anxiety to deal with anxiety. I mean, this is an anxious world. And this is a first-rate formula. The Living Clay, Perrier was on yesterday. Healthy Balance. The Healthy Balance has boron, has the magnesium, the calcium, all these things in this mineral formula under your tongue. Simple to take. Doesn't taste hardly at all. Tastes just a little different than water. And, the vitamin D, the Silver Mist humidifier additive, astaxanthin from, Robert Redfern, essential digestive capsules plus. You gotta have those for your, to go with your, you need enzymes to digest your food. It's just that simple. Vitamin E, a full spectrum tocopherol vitamin E, Hyzorb Q10, Willard water, clear, dark, iron earth also, and many others. So you need deodorant, you need toothpaste. We got the best mouthwash. We have the best there is. We have the best. The Silver Shield is deodorant is the best. The Will or the Vitamir toothpaste and mouthwash is the best. Check that out at thepowermall.com. Thepowermall.com, 877-817-9829. We appreciate your support, your purchases, your prayers, your donations. We're not here without it, and we're not here without you also. So thank you for what you've done for us, and you're welcome for what we've helped done for you. Be a part of this. So thank you so much. Getting back to our guest, John Lewis is very delightful. John, I've never met you until today. We talked a little before the show, and I find you very delightful, very thoughtful. I think experience is lost in our society. It's almost like a throwaway society. So older people experience loses its value, or at least they tell us. But that's not true at all. In fact, they're the most valuable thing. I grew up, let me tell you a little bit about myself, and I'll tell you my story. And I've said this on air a few times, but I'll tell it for you. I would say growing up, very American. My grandparents, both my grandfathers fought in World War II. My grandfather certainly instilled love of the United States. My father instilled question everything. You talk about world-class debater or arguer. That's a better term. That's my father. Is the Great Wall of China. You want to get an argument through him. That was like the Great Wall of China. So I had to learn very early to think of things. And if I was going to get through or make some mark in this conversation in this family, I had to really bring something, so to speak. And so that trained me. And so I went to college. My mother always wanted me to get a degree. She was obsessed about me getting a degree. One of my proudest accomplishments in my life is the fact that I never got a degree. And I'll tell you why. Let me tell you this story. Then I want to get your reaction. I was pretty fairly close to graduation. I was in a high level business class. And, this was about 20 years ago, but I don't know, 17 years ago or so, maybe a little more, 20 years ago. Who knows? Time goes quick. And in the class, the teacher was pretty renowned at the school, and the teacher got a guest lecturer. Now, the guy they brought in was an expert on globalism at the time, which, kind of just coming into Al Gore, talked a lot about it, what have you, NAFTA in the 90s. And so this teacher was teaching about business. And so he gets on the board, and there's 20 or 30 of us sitting in this class, and, and just enthralled by this traveling teacher, this guest lecturer who's so respected and renowned throughout the world. I can't even remember his name, but he drew a picture on the board of the United States, America, and Canada, and how we need to open these borders and how there'll be, free exchange back and forth, what have you, and that globalism is going to work. It's going to rising tide. They're going to lift all boats and what have you. And so I'm looking around literally, and this is 20 years ago in the United States, and everybody in the room practically is like drooling and fawning and wide-eyed, like hypnotized by this guy. And I'm thinking to myself, are they drinking the Kool-Aid? I don't understand this. And so I raised my hand and I said, okay, is it true that if you have like a hot system, a bowl of hot water, and then you have a bowl of cold water, and you get rid of the barrier between them, you break the barrier between them so that now water can go in between, that basically you're going to get lukewarm water out of the hole, that you got hot water, cold water is going to equal lukewarm water if they're allowed to open and transfer to each other? He says, yes. I said, well, why is it in your system here, if America, especially at the time, you have a pretty robust economy, Mexico not so much, Canada a little less than America, but Mexico certainly was a drain economically. Why is it that if you open up this hot and cold, so to speak, situations, so if I open up the borders here, that Mexico and America, both their economies are going to grow, they're going to get hotter? I mean, you're telling me you open this and the hole is going to get hotter. We're not going to have lukewarm. We're going to have hotter water. He says, yes, that's right. Because it's going to lift everybody and this is going to magnify and the opportunity and it's just going to explode throughout this whole thing. And the whole system from Canada down to Mexico is going to get enlarged and better. And I'm looking around again and I swear to God that like everybody I'm looking at is like shaking, like they're like soaking this up. And so I raise my hand again and I say, sir, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. And then that was the end of it. That was my last day of business class. Yeah, and that was it. I never got a degree.
Well, the problem is that those people refuse to see that the American culture is a very precious thing. We have to preserve it. It's proved itself over time. It's a great benefit to the rest of the world. I mean, the American economy, if the American economy goes south, the world economy goes south. Now, that has to tell you something about what we do for the rest of the world. If there's a great evil in the world, like Nazism or communism, America faces it down and protects the world from it. So, I mean, the way I look at it is American culture is a very, very precious thing. We don't do anything that might dilute that. We don't do anything that might destroy it or might weaken it. We've got to treasure it because it's proven itself to be successful and of great benefit to the rest of the world. Now, obviously, bringing in a certain number of people, immigration is a good thing. You know, some renewal. But allowing the culture of the country to be swamped by another is silly. It's and the problem is that large chunk of the intellectual community of the country don't like American culture, so they're happy
Why?
Having it diluted.
Why?
Because the answer to that is depressingly simple. They have a theory of what the society ought to be, and it's socialism. Or government control, or greater government control than there is, greater equality, which can only be government, increase of government power to enforce a greater equality. Now, they have that theory. Now, if you look at the world, there is one place that is more successful than any other, and that's America. As far as the economy is concerned, and as far as its culture, the influence of its culture is concerned. Now, what is characteristic of America that's not as characteristic anywhere else? It's free market culture. It's not just free market. It's a whole, this is what we were talking about before, a whole culture of people thinking for themselves, entrepreneurship. Individualism, a culture of individual. Now, so here's the reason those people don't like America. America is an insult to them and their theories. The success of America is proof that their theories don't work. And it's a proof that they're on the wrong track and they can't forgive the country
wow.
for that. And what they've done is they've taken over the universities as a kind of sanctuary. On campus, you can espouse socialism, and no one's going to disagree with you because that's the majority belief on those campuses. Greater government control on campus. There is total agreement. We need to transform America to make it something that it isn't, and it'll be much, much better when we do that.
Is this kind of an intellectual elite kind of thing? Like, I know better than the average person, so people need to give their will over to us, the intellectual elite, and we'll guide their lives for them? Is it that kind of arrogance?
Oh, yes. That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. But it's added to by the fact that they know the country beyond the campus walls, the ordinary country, is highly successful. And it's highly successful because it's run by people who don't agree with them. So that's another
wow.
reason why they resent ordinary people. They are angry that their own country proves that their theories don't work.
Because it's like they're not needed. It's like they have to feel needed or important
yeah.
or validated.
Yeah.
And everywhere
yeah.
they look, it's disvalidating them.
That's right. That's right. And so they hole up on university campuses. They concentrate there so that the political climate on campus is totally unlike the political climate off campus. It's a concentration of people who think that way, and you can walk around the campus and everyone's going to agree with you. You say these things and you don't get any real dissent, but the minute you start foot off campus, you're on your own. You've got to fend for yourself. And so they really, they hole up in campuses, make campuses a kind of sanctuary for socialist ideas, which can't survive in the real world.
How did this happen? How did we get there?
That's a very, very good question. I mean, one of the reasons I wrote my book is to try to explain this to ordinary members of the public. I didn't write the book for other professors because they're a lost cause. But ordinary people do have that question. They sort of say to themselves, well, now we know that Harvard, Yale, you know, University of California, they're great names, they're great institutions. We know that. So all that I'm hearing about how bad things are going on those campuses right now, how can that be? How could it have happened? Well, a chunk of my book is devoted to explaining how it happened. I'll give you the biggest event that changed the culture on the campuses, and that was a terrible accident. I mean, a historical accident that was so unfortunate looking back on it. It's that you look at the years 1965 to 1975, right? Now, those years, two things happened. And if only one of them had happened, we'd have been safe. But the two taken together were a catastrophe. The first was the baby boomers came of age and went to college. Now, you know, baby boomers, I don't know whether everyone remembers that now, but after the Second World War, 1945, back came soldiers, and they resumed family life that had been interrupted for 5 years during the war. And naturally, they started having children again, and so the birth rate shot up. A huge number of people, relative to the size of the population, born 1945 to 50. Now, by 1965, they're ready for college. And they cause a huge bump in the numbers. So that, for example, in 1965, there were 4 million kids in higher education. 10 years later, 1975, there are 9 million. They go from 4 million to 9 million in 10 years. Now, you think about it. A profession, university professors, has to more than double its numbers almost overnight. I mean, in terms of the development of universities, this is a huge campaign of hiring and finding new professors that has to happen. So big that if you take all the existing professors in the nation in 1965, you need to find that number and still some more straight away. Now, even in the best of times, that would have diluted quality. You can't have a hiring program that's that rapid without in fact, having a few duds come in as well as the good people. But that was also the time when something else happened, and that was the Vietnam War. So 65, it began almost exactly as the baby boomers arrived. 65 to 75, great unhappiness on the campuses because of the Vietnam War. Kids facing the draft, it was a very unpopular war. I mean, people can still disagree whether it needed to be fought or whether it was fought badly or well. But the one fact that you cannot get away from is that there was great unhappiness on the campuses and that people were very unhappy with the government and that conspiracy theory politics thrived on the campuses in those 10 years and radical leftism thrived in those years. So what I'm saying is that just as you needed to more than double the number of professors, take in a huge number of new professors, the people you had to hire from, the graduate students in those years, they were heavily radical leftists. So all of a sudden, the profession that was devoted to teaching people how to think for themselves took in a huge cohort, a number greater than the existing one, of mainly people who are mainly radical leftists. And that was the biggest tragedy in the history of higher education of this country. Now, at first, those were all junior professors. They didn't run the place. But by 20 years later, they were running the place. And so about 85 to 90, you see the campuses start to become really foolish.
And, so they became
without that.
So these professors that were radical, very, you know, very against the present status quo, they went in. It's like they saw the Vietnam War. They saw it as an opportunity for their mission. Our mission is now to transform America.
That's
and
right.
Now we have it, basically, is what you're saying.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And that's why certainly by 1990, the campuses are in control of the left. Well, let me give you some numbers, some other numbers. 1969, the Carnegie Commission did a survey of political preferences of professors, and they found it was 3-2, 3 left, 2 right on campus. Think about that. I mean, compare it to now, right? Three Democrats to 2 Republicans on the college campuses as far as professors go. Now, by the end of the century, that's 5-1, 5 left, 1 right. By about 8 years later, it's 8-1. And currently, the latest survey showed 13-1. And it's still rising because every time a professor retires, he's likely to be, you know, from that generation that's more conservative, and he's replaced by a radical leftist straight away. So it's 13-1 right now. Well, you know, that's a massive change. And when you have an institution that is now practically all leftists, well, if you put a, you know, put a bunch of people in a room, they're all leftists, they all agree with each other, you know, pretty soon they're going to start talking foolish nonsense because there's nothing, the other side, you see,
there's no pushback.
Political debate. Yeah, there's no pushback. Exactly. You got it exactly. You're ahead of me. But each side keeps the other healthy, right, in a debate. If one side says something foolish, they'll get mowed down by the other side. So both sides are kept speaking reasonably intelligently, because if they start to speak unintelligently, they get mowed down by the other side. So a healthy debate, you know, demands a strong presence of both sides. Take away one side, and we're in a state with both sides present, the leadership on of both parties will go to the ones who are smart and restrained and realistic. Take away the other side, leadership goes to the extremists. You know, people like AOC, who don't deal in realistic ideas. They deal in fantasies, you know, the dreams, the wish fulfillment list of the party, the things that are unachievable, but leftists dream of.
How did you handle this? I mean, you were right in the middle of all this.
I was sitting there watching it happening and being pretty appalled. I spoke up. I was fortunate in that I was well advanced in my career by the time the worst of this was happening. 1990 onwards, I would say the worst of it was happening. And by that time, I was a senior professor, so that, you know, I was safe enough. I didn't have to worry about anything. I was one of the editors of a journal called Heterodoxy, which was published monthly. David Horowitz and Peter Collier were the other editors.
David Horowitz?
We exposed the foolishness of the campus month after month for 10 years. And my colleagues in the University of California never went after me. I always used to think they didn't because they know they'd end up in Heterodoxy next month.
David Horowitz, I interviewed him, I think it was earlier this week. That's kind of ironic. He's an icon from the fact that his family, I assume you know the history, his family came from card-carrying communist family, and he knew exactly what this is about.
No, David is a friend, but the main editors of Heterodoxy were David Horowitz and Peter Collier, and I was the literary editor. And so we worked closely together for 10 years on this, and we had a great deal of fun poking fun at the stupidities of the campus left.
We only got about three. Go ahead. We got about 3 minutes left, so go ahead. I got a question for you.
Well,
finish your thought.
The fact that I was part of this and that the follies of the campus were published monthly meant that I had a very easy time of it on campus.
They were afraid of you. Plus, you had that British accent to fall back on. You could always fall back on your British pip pip ho ho, you know, all that.
Well,
cheerio.
Know, it's one of those facts of life. But yeah, I probably did get favorable treatment from that point of view. Yeah.
Well, it's hard to be mad at somebody with a British accent. It just is. I don't know why. It just is.
Well, plenty of people in the University of California were mad at me, believe me.
they would disagree.
But we in heterodoxy, we made fun of this stuff. But, of course, it's very serious. I mean, you know, there's a whole generation of students who are not getting an education. They're not getting taught how to think. They're getting taught how not to think. Instead of opening up their minds are getting closed. And their parents are paying good money for their tuition. And if anything, what's happening is the damage is being done. Instead of there being endowed with good qualities as thinkers, they're being actually handicapped.
The breakdown of higher education, how it happened, the damage it does, and what can be done. That's the name of the book. We've got about a minute or so left, John. It's been a pleasure meeting you. My last question is, you know, my girls are growing up. I look at them and I think, I'm not spending this money on college so they can go and learn to be some lunatic. I'd rather buy them a snow cone shack or something like that where they can actually learn to have a business or whatever. Your thoughts?
Well, here's a suggestion. There are courses on the web. There's an outfit called Great Courses. And you get on that website, there are great professors, very, very distinguished professors, will give a wonderful course online. And your kids can get a brilliant education that way for a fraction of the cost that they would. And you won't be supporting this corrupt campus regime. Believe me, they'll do much, much better on that than they would.
Great solution. What's it called? It's called greatcourses.com, or what is it called?
Great Courses. I only picked that one out as one example. I think there are more. Yeah, okay. Just really research the web, you know, find out. But take a course in American history, for example. You'll get a great course in American history.
Fantastic. We got to run, John. We got to run, John. God bless you, buddy. Ladies, stay there, John. We want you happy, healthy, successful, and free as God intends you. Have a great weekend. Love you. Stay there, John. Stay there.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiatics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams Probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Foods, Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is